Welcome to the New Mexico Motorsports Report, presented by Yearwood Performance, Albuquerque Dragway, WAG Upfitters, Accessories Unlimited, and Swope Real Estate. Your host, David Swope, will be talking about events happening around the state and on the national scene. Whether it's got two wheels or four wheels, pavement and off-road racing, or park and shine, if you're into it, we're into it. Call now at 994-1017. That's 994-1017 to get into all the action. Now here's your host, David Swope.
From the Bristol All-Star Race with Underglow Choose Cone number placement and COVID-19 restrictions to a weekend preview for this weekend's racing in Texas, and then here locally with a little bit of controversy this last weekend at Sandia Speedway. We have quite the show lined up today for the New Mexico Motorsports Report. I'm Spencer Hill, driver of the SEH Motorsports Grammy's Kitchen number 11W non-wing sprint car, sitting in for David Swope this morning. We're going to be talking about automobile-related motorsports activities around the state and on the national scene. Whether it has two wheels or four, asphalt or dirt track racing, off-road or park and shine, we'll be talking about it. This is New Mexico's only show devoted to motorsports-related activities with one full hour here on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team. Joining me, as always, is RJ Lees and Kelly, the producer behind the glass, the one that's making it all happen. Thank you guys both for coming in this morning. And before we get started, I do want to remind everybody that we're brought to you by Yearwood Performance. Since 1968, Yearwood Performance has been the home for Go Fast Parts, giving you the edge on the track and the street. Knowledge of what to use and how to use it. Fuel injection, ignition systems, gauges, and accessories, including the largest selection of hose and fittings. Torco Racing Fuel is also ready to go in convenient 5-gallon cans. New Mexico's oldest and largest speed shop, Yearwood Performance, located at 341 Eubank. Buy local, save time and money, yearwoodperformance.com. RJ, let's just roll right into it, dude. We have, like I said, a lot to talk about today, but let's get everybody warmed up with what they can expect to see this weekend with the UNSA Racing Museum event calendar.
Sorry about that.
Is it still working? There we go.
There we are. Sorry, we lost that. RJ for a second.
Oh, totally fine. No, we always try to start everything with all the local events, but you just know, as COVID-19, as everything's starting to open back up, we have a lot more national stuff that's getting planned out and trying to spread out. So, starting local, I mean, there's still the events like Votto and ABQ Dragway and Votto Speedway. Everything at the moment, we're still waiting until further notice because New Mexico, we're just trying to get everything kind of gathered around where, you know, ongoing mass gatherings are still restricted.
And it seems like people are split right now, RJ. You see Sandia Speedway racing without fans. Alien Motor Speedway, although facing a $5,000 fine this weekend, announced that they are going to race with fans down there. And then you get, on the other end of that, ABQ Dragway and Votto Speedway still closed. So it's really interesting to me to see such a split here in New Mexico. Not exactly sure the agendas on all that, but I am thankful that we do have somewhere like Sandia Speedway to go this evening.
Yeah, there's different areas for racing to everyone happen. So it's at Sandia, it's Duel in the Desert, it's a clay oval racing that's going to be today. The non-wing sprints, A-mods, mini sprints, street stocks, and cruisers, they are still having everything with COVID-19 where you have to pre-register, there are no fans in the stands, kind of get everything, you know, where they could still race. And from what we can tell, I mean, they've been, you know, the races so far has been extremely, you know, well so far. So Sandia is trying to get everything done while at Alien. It is the championship race with the USRA Modified, the B-Mod, stock cars, the hobby stocks, and then the late models where they're still, I mean, you still have masks. They're still trying to keep social distancing, but they've been all over the news with that fine where, hey, we're still getting everyone ready for local racing.
So, and you bring up a good point there. I'd like to bring Rue Stone, on the show here in a few weeks maybe to talk about how he was able to do all this and just talk about, too, how he's been taking all this free press. I've always said that there's no such thing as bad press, and he's getting a lot of it, whether you consider it good or bad. Every news station has been talking about Alien Motor Speedway. As far as I'm considered, that just it means that they're talking about it. And people are finally understanding that there's a racetrack down there, a new racetrack, and it is a really, really nice facility that Rue Stone has built down there. And I'm looking forward to going down there as we have an announcement, actually, breaking news on the New Mexico Motorsports Report, that August 8th, is going to be a NMMRA sprint car race down at Alien Motor Speedway.
Really?
So once again, that's August 8th. We'll put it on the NHTSA Racing Museum event calendar here in the next 2 weeks. But August 8th, NMMRA going to be making their debut down there.
That just means everything's growing out there. But Rue, open invitation whenever you want to come on the show to talk about that. There are some, you know, upcoming events that could happen that we're always trying to talk about as well. So Moriarty, their next event, I mean, they had a protest and kind of everything where they're trying to do everything in their part to get open with, you know, on two-wheel racing where they think, you know, it's a little more spaced out and everything's kind of planned out where it's only like a family cruise. So it would seem to make sense that they are doing everything to be open. But their next event wouldn't be till August 15th and 16th that's scheduled, which is going to be round two of their championship series. And then Gassett Off-Road Racing, they're going to have their next coming event, their next possible event, is going to be round six of their championship racing in Cuba, New Mexico, the Oh My God 100, which is August 15th and 16th. So great events coming up that we've got.
For people that don't know about the Oh My God, that race has been going on for many, many decades. It's gone through a couple different hands, but even my uncle, who's now serves as my crew chief on the dirt side, has raced the Oh My God multiple times. That's a very historic event, and I'm very excited to see Gassett Off-Road continuing that on August 15th through the 16th.
Yes, yes. No, and then we're going a little more to the national stuff in a bit. There is a car show this weekend. If you're down in Farmington at the McGee Park, there's the Crime Stoppers show where they're still going to, like I said, everything's spaced out, but they're doing everything they can to raise awareness with, you know, obviously, you know, crime and everything going on, but they're going to try to have a fundraiser in the car show where they still want to bring everyone out. They still want to enjoy an event, and Farmington's going to try out one. And a big one that's hopefully going to come up August 1st is going to be the second annual Special Olympics car show and fundraiser, which is at the Holy Family Catholic Church. It's on Atrisco, 562 Atrisco Southwest, and sponsored by the Knights of Columbus District 21. So it's a great event, open to all cars, trucks, tractors, and motorcycles, it says. It's going to be an all-day afternoon event from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. So great stuff that's still coming on the horizon and locally in Albuquerque.
Yeah, and luckily we are starting to see more and more racing show up. Again, a lot of restrictions happening, so definitely make sure that you check all the websites before you do anything as far as going out to the track in person. A lot of people are doing, if they are having fans, a lot of pre-sale tickets are being sold right now. And one thing that was really nice to see last weekend, RJ, was the NASCAR Cup Series and the All-Star Race having nearly 25,000 fans in the stands at Bristol Motor Speedway. Up in your neck of the woods.
No, of course. No. Hey, you visit there almost as much as I do, my man, so it works out. But no, amazing events that are, you know, they're finding ways to do it. One thing I've noticed in NHRA, it's their second week in a row in Indianapolis. So there are different events, but they're kind of spreading it out and having ways where, hey, we're allowed to be here, we're allowed to have fans, let's might as well race. So NHRA is having their Lucas Oil NHRA Summer Nationals at Indianapolis. So that's always just something I kind of look forward to, too.
Yeah, and that's because a lot of the teams of NHRA are actually built in that Indianapolis area. So you see that with NASCAR, too. A lot of things happening around the Charlotte area where all the teams are based there. But we're actually going to talk about that on the other side of this break with James Jackson, who is actually at the Bristol All-Star Race. So don't you change that dial. We have a jam-packed episode here coming up.
Hey, race fans, this is NASCAR team owner Coach Joe Gibbs. You're listening to David Slope on New Mexico Motorsports Report on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team.
Hey, Albuquerque, this is Cole Custer, driver of the Paz Automation Ford. You're listening to New Mexico Motorsports Report with David Swope on ESPN Radio Albuquerque, 1017 The Team.
The pit stop is over. Let's return to the New Mexico Motorsports Report on Facebook and at nmmotorsportsreport.com. Now back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report presented by Yearwood Performance, Albuquerque Dragway, Whack Up Fitters, Accessories Unlimited, and Swope Real Estate. Here's David.
And welcome back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report here on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team. Again, Spencer Hill filling in for David Swope this morning. And we had a really exciting Wednesday night for us from the Bristol Motor Speedway in Bristol, Tennessee, for the All-Star Race. First time ever being held there. From Underglow to the Choose Cone to number placement, we had a little bit of everything. And covering that event with theracingexperts.com was James Jackson. So we'll go to the phone right now. James, how are you doing this morning?
I'm wonderful. How are you, Spencer?
I'm great, man. So talk to me a little bit about just the overall experience that you had out there. Of course, we had a little bit of restrictions with COVID-19, but the Bristol Motor Speedway hosting the All-Star Race that's traditionally been ran at Charlotte Motor Speedway every year, except for the one time that it was at Atlanta Motor Speedway, all of a sudden we go from a 1.5-mile to a 0.5-mile short track, and I don't think it disappointed. What were your thoughts overall on that?
It definitely did not disappoint, Spencer. You know, walking up to the track, I was talking to my buddies, and I was like, this is something unusual but exciting. You know, I haven't been this excited for an all-star race in a few years now. Last one I was at was at 2018 in Charlotte, and that was a fun race, but nothing beats like short track night racing at Bristol, which is something I always wanted to do, was go to a night race at Bristol. So the production with the Underglow was really cool. You had the Choose Cone, which was really exciting as well. And obviously, as you'd mentioned, the restrictions for COVID-19, there was a lot that happened with that. In terms of like face masks and social distancing and all that, but that didn't hinder from the excitement of the event itself. And personally, I feel like we should do more short track all-star races.
So give me a little idea, as a fan perspective, what was it like going from your car to getting to the seat? What was different about this race than any other race that you'd been to?
Well, normally, you know, as a race fan, you like to go to the track, and I mean, from the ones I've talked to, like to go and, you know, spend money on some merchandise of their favorite driver. Well, for me, I was looking, you know, to spend some merchandise, get some diecast collections, of course, as well. But I walk up, and there's only two haulers. There's, you know, the Hendrick Motorsports camp brought two haulers down, which is unusual to see only two haulers at a racetrack for merchandise. There were a couple vendors out, but the requirement was you had to wear your mask on the track grounds unless you're in your seat. As you're a little ways away from the track, that wasn't enforced as much, but as you approached the track itself, you would have to be required to wear your mask. And if you didn't have one by chance, the track would actually, they gave out masks for people who didn't have one with the Bristol Motor Speedway logo on it. So that was interesting. When you came into the gate, they all had their masks on. They were social distancing, checking out your bags, but it's kind of hard to social distance when you have, you know, thousands of people coming in a gate. But once you get there, everybody's kind of spread out, staying off of each other. And they did card only for the most part. They didn't accept cash. So that was a smart move on their part to avoid touching any cash or anything like that. And when you got to your seat, you were allowed to remove your mask. But however, when the race ended, you had to remain in your section, wear your mask, and wait till the ushers told you to leave. They would dismiss you in sections. So, I mean, it was a process, but at the same time, it's what needs to happen for sports in general to come back.
Do you think that that's something that is going to work for NASCAR for the time being? Or do you think that they might have bit off a little more that they can chew? I know that a lot of people, Twitter especially, has been blowing up about maybe this was a move that came too soon with COVID. Do you think that this was a move that came too soon, or do you think that this is something that could work for not only NASCAR, but maybe other major sports as well?
Well, Spencer, I was talking to my buddies James Wilson and Brett Wiseman about this as they came with me on the trip, and we were discussing that this is the exact thing that needed to happen for sports to come back in general. I mean, it's sports can't function without fans, at least in the minor league system and anything, because fans provide the ticket money, which help, you know, bring in the ticket sales and stuff like that. So this was, I don't think, too soon. I think it's much needed. You have to have this test subject, which is technically what NASCAR is doing, honestly, if you look at it. They're testing the waters for other sports, and you're not going to know what worked and what didn't until you try it. And personally, I didn't think the COVID restrictions they had hindered my experience at all. I felt like it didn't change anything. It may have made some things a little unusual, but at the same time, nobody was breathing down my neck in my seat. We were all socially distanced in our seats as well. So, I mean, I felt like it's something that other sports can look at and say, this is a good idea. Maybe this needs some improvement. But all in all sports can look at NASCAR and say, this was a good idea to do. Obviously, we won't know the COVID numbers until a week or two later. But you look at it and I think it's good for the overall big picture of sports coming back.
Well, that's exciting to hear. Let's move into the racing action on track now. We start with the Open, which every segment that was run, there was three of them to be exact, it allowed one driver to get into that all-star race and then the fan vote going to Clint Bowyer. In that, though, one of the biggest surprises that I think everybody saw was the incident between Mike McDowell and Bubba Wallace. What happened there from your perspective, and what was the crowd reaction?
Well, from my perspective, I was actually on the back straightaway where it happened, and I watched the replay at least 1,000 times just to clarify what I saw. From what my opinion and what I saw was that Michael McDowell turned into Bubba Wallace. I don't know if it was intentional or not. I can't speak for Michael McDowell. But it looked like he turned into him and turned Bubba into the fence. But I can't see the argument that William Byron got into Michael McDowell until after the contact with Bubba Wallace. As far as the reaction, honestly, in today's society, you know, it's Bubba's speaking out on his mind and everything like that, which is good for him. But the crowd in Tennessee did not like that very much. They booed quite a bit for driver intros, and they cheered when he wrecked. As well as I saw a Confederate flag flying over the track when we arrived as well. So obviously he still has some backlash and some hostility, but any driver or any athlete trying to make a change in their sport's going to have that.
On the flip side of that, though, they've also been able to bring in a whole new group into NASCAR as fans. I know a lot of people on Twitter have been watching for the first time, which is also exciting, equally as much as the people that may be a little bit less receptive to it. The 34 team, back to that, though, they got a nice little present left at their hauler. Can you give everybody a little idea? Because TV mentioned it briefly, but I feel like it was a little bit more meaning behind it than what TV really was able to portray.
So, after Bubba got wrecked, I didn't watch the TV interview until after, so I didn't know what he said as I was sitting in my seat, but my brother texted me and said that he's very mad, and then obviously he had a reason to be, as he's racing for a chance for the $1 million, which would be huge for that team. And so he goes back to his car, gets the front bumper, and puts it at the hauler of the 34 car. I guess that's his trophy. I don't know what Bubba thought it was. I don't know what the memo was, but he dropped it off for him. The 34 team actually brought it over to the trash can as well, which I thought was funny. And then they came back and got it. And obviously now they're auctioning it off for what I saw, at least this morning, I think was $15,000 right now is what the price is at. But, you know, despite the bad blood from that night with Bubba and McDowell, they both came together and, you know, decided that, you know, the Raceway Ministries auction was a great way to go with that. Turn a bad situation into a good one. So good on both of them for doing that.
Yeah, talk about turning trash into treasure on that one. A quick recap from the All-Star Race. Chase Elliott, your winner. Kyle Busch, second. Third went to Kevin Harvick, fourth to Brad Keselowski, and rounding out your top five was the number 11 of Denny Hamlin. Now, the big three this weekend wasn't drivers for a change. It was actually the ideas of underglow beneath the cars, number placement being moved for this event, and a choose cone. Which of those had the greatest impact in the race, do you think, James?
Well, I feel like the choose cone definitely had the biggest impact on things. I don't know if what you guys could see on TV or not, but from what my perspective was, the inside lane just couldn't get going all night on the restarts, which is key for track position if you need it. But in the situation of the choose cone, you know, if you're not making the inside lane work, do you choose the high line and just try and make it work on the outside, which I saw a lot of drivers trying to make the inside lane work like Ryan Blaney and just couldn't. But I did see they tried to get a runoff on into turn one, and they got some momentum going in there, but they couldn't challenge the leader is what I'm trying to say. And Chase Elliott managed to make it work. I think he had a great car, so he could make it work on either lane, which I also want to add with the COVID situation that I think first race with the largest attendance in fans since COVID, I feel like it was a great thing for Chase Elliott to win that race, NASCAR's most popular driver. But back to the choose cone, I really liked how that worked, and I felt like that affected the race a lot, Spencer.
Well, James, a little less than a minute left. Really quick, who do you think are going to be three cars to watch at Texas Motor Speedway this weekend?
I think Kevin Harvick is definitely one. Denny Hamlin, you can't count out those two since they're dominating so much. Joey Logano could probably be one that you should watch as well.
James, how can we keep up with everything that you have going on with the Racing Experts?
Well, you can follow the Racing Experts on Twitter at The Racing Experts. You can follow me on Twitter at JamesDJackson98. We just post our articles on there, and we try and keep everybody updated on everything going on with esports and as well as the racing on track itself.
Well, James, enjoy your Saturday. Some big racing events coming up, not only this afternoon, but also tomorrow. Thank you for joining us this morning.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Spencer.
Once again, that was James Jackson with theracingexperts.com. On the other side of the break, we're going to flip it back over to the local side of things and talk about a little bit of controversy that happened last weekend at Sandia Speedway, but also some good things, too. Stay tuned. You're listening to the New Mexico Motorsports Report on ESPN Radio.
101.7, The Team.
Hey Albuquerque, this is Brian Urlacher. You're listening to the New Mexico Motorsports Report with David Swope on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team.
Hey Albuquerque, this is Simon Pagenaud, driver of the number 22 Penske Menard Chevrolet. You are listening to the New Mexico Motorsports Report with David Swope on ESPN Radio, 101.7 The Team.
The pit stop is over. Let's return to the New Mexico Motorsports Report on Facebook and at nmmotorsportsreport.com. Now back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report presented by Yearwood Performance, Albuquerque Dragway, Whack Up Fitters, Accessories Unlimited, and Swope Real Estate. Here's David.
Welcome back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report here on ESPN Radio, 101.7 The Team. Once again, filling in for David Swope this morning, I'm Spencer Hill. David actually just sent us a picture in the group chat. He's working on his dart this morning from his garage, something that he doesn't always get to do. So that's kind of cool to see. Just got the new gas tank in from Yearwood earlier this week and ready to install it. I know how much trouble those gas tanks can be, so hopefully he isn't throwing out too many four-letter words this week. So going back to local racing, though, Sandia Speedway has been racing the last couple of weeks, even though restrictions have been in place. It's been some pretty good racing over there. That's our local track here in Albuquerque, so it's always nice to see people have the opportunity to go out there and have some fun. We caught up with the 2018 NMMRA champion, Caleb Seiss, earlier to talk a little bit about what's been going on down there.
All right, sitting here with the 2018 NMRA champion, Caleb Seist. Caleb, how are you doing today?
Good, man. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for coming in. So obviously things have been pretty crazy since we got back from the COVID-19. Things are finally starting to flow with racing and everything like that. How have things been? Where have you been racing? I know it's hard to find races right now.
Yeah, it's been tough to find races and stuff like that, but I've got a great team who's willing to, you know, go the extra mile to get us to race. But we've run a few times there at Sandia, and we've also gone out of town. We've gone to Roswell, Lubbock, and Amarillo to run.
How's the Roswell track, by the way? I'm interested because they just announced that August 8th is actually going to be an MMRA race down there.
It's good track, man. It's new. It's new track. I think Roostone's doing a great job. Of course, you know, they got to work out some little issues here and there, but I think as long as he keeps up with it and you know, stays with it, it'll be a good track.
Mm-hmm. Does it feel like home since it's the old El Paso grandstand a little bit?
A little bit. It's hard for me to really tell because I didn't really spend too much time in El Paso, but it's a cool looking track. It's definitely different, and I honestly dig it. I really do.
That's very cool. With that track down there in Roswell, what are the track conditions like? I know the heat's been really bad down there lately. Has it been pretty hard to keep moisture in it?
Yeah, it has. Like I said, I've only been there once, but the guys over there have been really working hard to try to keep that track pretty heavy, and I think they do a pretty good job. But usually, yeah, you can count on it going dry slick. When I raced over there, there was a top, actually, and I think I was the only one running the top, and I was actually able to make some good ground, but I think the faster line is going to be on the bottom most of the time because there's not too often that it really builds up a curb.
Mm-hmm. So you also said that you've been running at Sandia quite a bit. Ari picked up one win this year in the Wing 360 division down there. How have things been with all the regulations in place? How are they handling that?
Well, at Sandia, there's obviously no spectators allowed, which definitely hurts the purse and stuff like that. I know Charlie's cut the purse in half, which is, you know, it is what it is. I mean, he's got to try to make some money too. It's definitely tough to make money when you can't have any fans. There's those regulations where, you know, there can only be so many people in the pits and part of your team and stuff like that. But I mean, I feel like Charlie is doing a really good job of keeping things going and actually just allowing us to race. So I think he's doing a great job.
You also have a new teammate this year with Devin Amos coming on to the team. How have things been meshing with him, and how's he been getting up to speed in that?
He's been doing great. I feel like he's doing a lot better than I was back when I first started. But he's doing good. I think it's definitely a learning curve for him. I think it's a little bit frustrating for him. You can kind of see it a little bit, but I feel like he should be definitely really happy of where he's at driving-wise and stuff like that. Because, I mean, he hasn't had much races under his belt, and he's already got a second and a heat race win. And, I mean, you can't really ask for much more than that.
I know that you had a similar path as Devin as far as coming up from, like, the micro sprints. You had a little bit of a break in between the racing, though. What were you doing during that break for those of the people that don't know? And how was it trying to get back into a car after that?
Well, the main reason why I got out of racing there for a while was because I was going to school in Roswell. I attended the New Mexico Military Institute, and it was just really hard for me to race while being out there. And my grandparents, who owned the car, were just kind of, you know, just kind of over it a little bit, especially with me not being around. And they ended up just selling the cars and stuff like that. And I was just mainly focusing on school and trying to figure out what I was going to do. And I ended up going to a NASCAR race in Phoenix. I think it was in 2016. Late 2015, and it just got me right back into it, and I was
the bug bit you again.
Exactly, and I was just looking for a ride right when I got back into New Mexico, and that's how it started, really.
That's something that's really difficult to do here in New Mexico, is trying to find a ride. Right. What was the process like trying to do that? Because there's not that many teams open.
Right. I was just trying to get a hold of people that I knew back from racing and seeing what was going on, if there was anything that I could get into, and it didn't matter what it was. I wasn't necessarily looking for a sprint car ride, but I was also seeing, man, if there's a mini sprint I could get back into or anything like
just
that.
Just anything.
Anything, really. And it just so happened that Dave ended up having a car open for me, and unfortunately it was that during that time where Josh got hurt, and that's very unfortunate. But yeah, and I just had to come up with some money and make it happen.
And you've seen a lot of success doing that too, so obviously it was a move that worked out in the long run. What do you think are the key parts of success that make that team mesh so well with you guys?
Well, definitely Steve and Clyde have been doing it for a really long time, over 40 years, and that definitely really helps to have those guys around and have their knowledge around and just listening, you know. I came in just fresh, didn't know anything really about racing. I mean, I raced, but, you know, it was just mainly for fun, just going out there, going around in a circle, just whatever. But once they taught me, brought me up to speed with the setups and how to drive the car, it was just all about listening and trusting what they said.
That car has been moving along pretty fast this year as well. Unfortunately, got caught up in quite the incident last weekend at Sandia Speedway. Looking at the video, collision out of turn two with Jason Tanner racing for the lead. What happened there? I know there's a lot of things going on Facebook right now, but I'd like to just ask your perspective on that.
Well, there's not a whole lot I can say about it. I think that, you know, it was towards the end of the race, and I was running second at the time, and we were coming up to lap traffic, and I felt like I had to do something to get the lead in order to win the race, and I went up top on in one and two and tried to go around Jason in a lap car, and we were coming out of two, and I mean, it's a racing incident. It is what it is, but I feel like, you know, Jason could have given me a little bit more room, but I ended up into the wall and
torn up race car.
Up the car, so.
What all got torn up in that, by the way? I mean, pictures looked like it was a really heavy lick in that outside wall.
It was a good lick. I definitely got the frame. Frame for sure, front end, rear end. Little components, wheels and stuff like that, shocks. But nothing too bad. I mean that's a pretty
the frame
is
obviously the worst part.
Yeah,
but send that back over to Bonnie and Jack at J&J Auto Racing, and they should have you guys fixed up pretty quick on that.
Right.
That's good. But you are going to be racing tonight, though, at Sandia Speedway, correct?
Correct. I'll be out there running the non-wing car and the different car that we ran in Phoenix. So excited to get that car dialed in and see what it wants. And
is this your first non-wing race of the year?
It'll be my first non-wing race of the year. That's kind of...
It's hard to say this late in July. I know, it's crazy. It's like, and for me, this is only my second race of the year later this evening. So that's just kind of how this thing's been in 2020, one of those years. Caleb, I know there's a lot of people that help get you to the track every night, though. Who are some of these people? And just another shout-out to Dave Burns for doing what he does to keep you and Devin in these beautiful race cars.
Right, yeah, I can't thank Dave enough. He's honestly, I think, one of the best car owners a driver could have, because he does anything that you need him to do, and he just wants to go racing. So I can't thank Dave Burns with Hal Burns Truck and Equipment, XS Energy, Napa Belts and Hoses, Schaefer's Racing Engine Oil, Performance Plus Racing Engine, Scoggin Mechanical Industries Incorporated, West Auto Supply, and JMS Phone Technology for really helping us out this year and keeping us going through these hard times.
Well, Caleb, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it. I know that work schedule's been crazy along with racing, but looking forward to seeing you hopefully a lot more in the pit area instead of at the shop here later this year.
Awesome. Thank you, Spencer. I really appreciate it, and good luck to you, man, this evening.
Thank you.
Once again, that was Caleb Seiss, the 2018 NMMRA champion. On the other side of the break, we'll hear the other side of the story with last week's winner from Sandia Speedway in the 360 Wing Sprint Car Division with driver of the number 11 Mosher Racing Sprint Car, Jason Tanner. You've been listening to the New Mexico Motorsports Report on ESPN Radio.
101.7, The Team.
ESPN Radio, 101.7, The Team, with David Swope, the fastest radio host in the West. this is Al Unser, four-time winner of the Indy 500. You've been listening to David Slope of the New Mexico Motorsport Report on ESPN Radio 1017, The Team.
The pit stop is over. Let's return to the New Mexico Motorsports Report on Facebook and at nmmotorsportsreport.com. Now back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report presented by Yearwood Performance, Albuquerque Dragway, Whack Upfitters, Accessories Unlimited, and Swope Real Estate. Here's David.
Welcome back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report here on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team. Again, Spencer Hill filling in for the busy bee, David Swope, this morning. He's working on some projects in the garage, so I'm holding down the fort over here in the studio in Rio Rancho. Carrying the checkered flag for today's show, on the phone now is Jason Tanner, driver of the Mosher Racing number 11 sprint car in the Wing 360 division at Sandia Speedway. Jason, how you doing this morning?
Morning, Spencer. Doing pretty good. How about you, bud?
Oh, doing good, man. You've had a pretty busy schedule the last few weeks since racing has kind of resumed from the post-COVID-19 pandemic that we've experienced here in New Mexico. How have things been going with Jerry Mosher and that Mosher Racing number 11?
Well, things have been going pretty good. I came to join up with Jerry at the beginning of last season, 2019. And, it had been over 20 years since I'd been in a wing sprint car. And so, getting back into it was a little bit rough or shaky, to say the least, for me, but have a great program, great car owner, couldn't ask for better, and I think we're finally starting to make some progress, as our results will show last weekend.
And you had a pretty good run last year with Jerry Mosher as well. What have things been like having a car owner that's also on track with you? Is that a little bit different?
Well, yeah, it is. It's quite difficult to be crew chief for one car, especially when you're driving it. And then you go and you put a second car in that you got to help make decisions on setup changes with. And things can get interesting and at least busy for sure. So, my driving style versus Jerry's driving style are much different. We've been going through a lot of setup changes with the cars, trying to figure out what's most comfortable for each one of us. But we can also at the same time relate to one another, what changes are helping us, what the track's like, so on and so forth. So there's pros and cons to it, but I think that we're doing the best job that we can with it.
Up until last year, it had been quite a while since you'd been behind the wheel of a sprint car. What do you think is one of the biggest changes that have been made in the world of sprint car racing since you'd last been in? What's something that was a little bit new to you when you hopped back in it?
Well, like I say, it had been over 20 years since I'd been in a wing sprint car. So kind of my forte was the non-wing stuff, which, although I was out of that for a few years, I feel really comfortable getting back into a non-wing car. The biggest thing about getting back into a wing car after so much time was just the dynamics of how the car works. Typically in a non-wing car, you're over on the right rear and you got a lot of feel there. And that determines where you pick up the throttle and how you drive the car. With the wing car, the wing plays such a huge role in how the car handles. That was the biggest thing that I've had to get used to so far. Just the speed. These wing cars, they go through the corner so much faster than a non-wing car does. It's not even funny. So that was one thing, the speed and the aero with the wing and how it affects the handling of the car and how you're supposed to drive the car that way.
Are we going to see you run some non-wing stuff this year, or are you going to stick to the wing stuff?
I don't have an answer to that. I wish I could tell you that I'd be back in a non-wing car sometime this year. It's been discussed. We've got a car that could potentially go that way. But, as you well know, this is an expensive sport, hobby at our level. So I don't know if we're going to get an all-wing car together this year or not. Probably not, I would say, but maybe sometime in the future, I'm hopeful.
Yeah, that's another thing. It's kind of hard to tell right now, especially with all the stuff going on. It's just difficult to find a race right now, let alone try to plan two different divisions like what we were talking about just right there. So tonight is going to be my first time back at Sandia Speedway since the regulations have changed with COVID. How have things been running at Sandia? What are some things that are a little bit different that drivers can expect this evening?
Well, the first most obvious thing is that there's no fans in the stands, right? So I got to give a shout out to Charlie Fagan, the promoter out at Sandia Speedway, for him sticking to the governor's guidelines as best as he can, so that we may have races here locally. Otherwise, you know, the track hasn't been ran on a whole lot this year. We've been out to some practices earlier this season, out there, and the track's different. I mean, the track's going to be the same. It's just the social distancing stuff that you got to adhere to, wearing the masks, so on and so forth. That's probably the biggest change. You know, you go out there like we did last Saturday night and you win the race and you go right back to the pit. You know, there's no fans. The fans make up so much of the experience, at least for me as a driver. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's really missed out there on my behalf for sure.
Definitely a little bit different feeling out there. As you just touched on, you picked up the win last week at Sandia Speedway. How much did it mean to pick up that win after being sidelined for so long due to COVID?
It's always good to win one of your first races back out after the off season. Like I've been saying, we've been doing some setup changes, and I feel like we finally got the car feeling really good. More comfortable for me to drive, where I've got the confidence to do what I need to in the car. And, we've just been
solid. Yeah.
Yeah. The car feels good and we're looking forward to more races. Unfortunately, you know, this whole COVID thing, if we can get over this sooner than later, we do plan to race as much as we can. We've considered going over to West Texas, you know, I know Alien Motor Speedway has had some shows down there that they've been running, so that's in our plan. I hear they've got a race, 360 wing race tentatively scheduled for Labor Day weekend that we'd like to go attend, and just try to get as much experience as we can and know that we're doing the right thing with the cars.
So that win last weekend, though, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask a little bit about the incident out of turn two. Three wide, and then contact off the exit of turn two. Obviously, you went on to win the event, so no harm, no foul on your end. But can you just tell us a little bit more about what happened there?
Yeah, it was after, I was out front and had encountered some lap traffic, which, you know, I've got to obviously get better with getting around lap traffic. Got stuck behind the lapper for a couple laps that allowed second place Caleb to catch up. And he got a run on the top side going through one and two. I tried to hug the bottom as much as possible getting around the lapper coming out of two. It was actually, from my perspective, ahead of, Caleb running the top. And, you know, I knew that he was up there. I let my car drift out as far as I thought I could. Just, you know, leaving him as much of a lane as I could to go on the top side if he were there. And, you know, the way I see it, it was a racing incident. You can't see out of the right side of these cars very well. And, you know, of course, they have no rearview mirrors. So you can't see a car that's behind you.
Totally understandable with that, yeah. Jason, yeah. A little bit less than 30 seconds left. I do want to give you a chance, though, to tell us who helps you get out to the racetrack.
First and foremost, Mosier Motorsports, Jerry Mosier. Great guy. Couldn't say enough good about him. Car Crafters did the paint on the cars. Kerr Squared is another of our supporters. Longacre Racing Products, AFCO Shocks, Oliver Motorsports. Without all these people, none of this would be possible for us.
Jason, congratulations once again on the win last weekend. Hopefully you can carry that momentum into the next one. Thank you so much for joining me this morning, though.
Thanks a lot, Spencer. Good luck tonight, buddy. Go get them.
Thank you. We will talk to you soon, Jason. Once again, that was Jason Tanner, driver of the Mosier Racing, number 11 sprint car for Jerry Mosier in the Wing 360 division at Sandia Speedway. Well, guys, that about does it for me. Thank you for listening to the New Mexico Motorsports Report. Tune in every Saturday morning from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. for the latest in automobile and motorsports-related activities here on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team. RJ, thank you for joining me. Kelly, thank you for all your hard work. And we will see you guys soon with another exciting show next Saturday with another guest host.
KQTM FM, Rio Rancho Albuquerque, 1017 The Team, your hometown radio station.
ESPN Radio Sports Center.
I'm Christine Lisi. Here's what's happening. In the opinion of LSU football coach Ed Orgeron, there will be a football season at some point. His gut feeling, it may be a little later than usual, but it will happen. Orgeron, on Marty and McGee this morning, also said he wouldn't want his players and coaches to think any other way, adding that amid the coronavirus pandemic, the SEC needs football, the state of Louisiana needs football, and the country needs football. A vow from Washington football team owner Dan Snyder to change the team culture. He and his wife sent a letter to team employees in the wake of the Washington Post report detailing sexual assault allegations made by 15 former female employees against 5 ex-staffers. In addition to that vow, Snyder also apologized to employees and asked for their assistance in improving the team culture. ESPN NFL insider Jeff Darlington.
There is really no place in the league like that organization when it comes to the class system that exists. There's Dan Snyder and his inner circle, and there's everybody else. And I can tell you, speaking with dozens of people over the years, this is a widely held feeling about the organization, that if you are not in that inner circle, you're generally not treated all that well.
Our Jeff Darlington, suspended Yankees pitcher.